conspiracy. It's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy.
Ho, ho, ho. It's a conspiracy. They operate secretly. Control what you hear and see. Everybody knows it's true. But that smoking gun ain't the only one firing when the bullets flew. Plain to see, they're lying to you and me. Oh, 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 it's a conspiracy. They operate secretly. Control what you hear and see.
And good evening. Here we are once again. By golly, it's Saturday night, March the 11th, 1995. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight, and we have a big show scheduled. First off, however, once again, joining us in studio to help move this process along, Mr. Dwight Schultz. Dwight, it's a great pleasure having you back. You're not going to be around the next 2 weeks, are you?
You know, Don, you're getting to sound more like W.C. Fields every week. But no, I'm not. I have good fortune has smiled on me, thank God. And I'm going to be doing an episode of The Outer Limits for Showtime in the province of Vancouver, Canada.
That's where they shoot The X-Files.
That's where they shoot The X-Files. And
are you going to stop by and say hey?
What, to the people of the X-Files?
Sure.
Well, you know, they don't know me. I don't know them. I just like their work.
Everybody knew Murdoch. Come on.
No, that's not true. This, you would be surprised. Even those people at NBC who produced the show didn't watch it. I've been told that. I mean, they told me that to my face. I don't watch that show, but I hear it's good. I hear you're good, but I don't see that. I mean, we make some money on it, but we're not proud of it. No, but yes, I'm very fortunate. This is a very good script. It's going to be a very good series.
And
I
you
believe.
Play a very out-of-character
yes,
character.
Yes, I play a debunker, a physicist debunker, and I have a lot of models to choose from, folks. And it's a debunker of the paranormal. I don't consider UFOs necessarily paranormal. Some are paranormal, but I consider it more of a reality-based exercise. But it's a very good script. I understand that the pilot, the two-hour pilot for Showtime, is airing very soon, and it has received some rave reviews. It's supposed to be quite frightening. This is a very good, classy script, and there are a lot of special effects indicated, folks. I've never been in a big special effects show. Even the Star Trek's I did. This is kind of a dream come true for me.
Well, then, this is if you don't have Showtime, this is a good reason to get it, right?
If you don't have Showtime, it's a good reason. It's a very good reason to get it. But I think this is Showtime's foray into sci-fi. And also, let me say, as an unemployed actor most of the time, I want you folks out there who are interested in sci-fi to know I have seen a lot of sci-fi scripts coming at me, and some of them have been pretty good. And I know because I've read for them. I don't get them, but I read them, and I know when they're good and when they're bad. And I want to tell you that the networks, the X-Files has started a little kick here. People are starting to see that there is room for some good sci-fi, because there's bad sci-fi and good sci-fi. But there's some good things out there around the corner if they're done well. And that, you know, sometimes a script can be very, can be wonderful on the page, but it's not executed properly and turns out to be not so good. But I think there are good things on the horizon.
Well, you didn't think I'd open the show up and not mention ham radio, did you?
Ham radio! You mentioned it, Don!
Well, we've been getting a lot of email. And for you folks out there that haven't the last couple of weeks knocked down my internet address, get a pencil because I'm going to give it to you in a second. But I just heard from another ham back in Florida. Got a letter from Larry.
And this is what it sounds like.
Larry Shumway. Larry Shumway, N5DHY. I wonder if he's any relation to Gordon Shumway. Do you know who that was?
I know Amway's, but not Shumway's.
No, the Shumway's. Don't you remember Gordon Shumway?
And I don't know the sound that hams make.
That was Alf.
I don't know the sound.
You never watched Alf?
I didn't watch
Alf. Well, anyway, same.
I was working when Alf was on. I was working.
N5DHY. Larry, thanks for the note. I've got your card. And also, George Bowen, the guy that contacted me a couple of weeks ago when I first mentioned the amateur license.
You sure you're not becoming a spam?
I could be. He produces a program called This Week in Amateur Radio, and they run it here in the Southern California area at 4:30 on Saturdays. And I tuned in today.
What frequency?
Well, it's on 147.435. Okay? I tuned in today to hear what the show was about, and honest to God, I could have dropped out of my seat because I heard them congratulate me on the amateur frequency for getting my technician license. So, George, I'm sure you're listening out there. Thanks, pal. We love you. And George's call sign is N2LQS. So, for all you hams out there that haven't contacted me yet, if you send me a note or something with your call signs on it and you give me an excuse, I'll give them out over the radio. I think that's a heck of a deal.
No, I think that sounds exciting. I mean, I can't wait, folks. I really can't wait. You know, this is going to be like the Freemasons. There's going to be all kind of secret handshakes and sounds. You know, you can hear them when they all get together. Soon, there won't be people will be calling up here, and they'll be going.
No, it's a dits and does. It's dits and does.
Hams of the air. Hams.
Unite.
Hams.
All right, let's get going. We've got a special thing. Before we get to tonight's guest, we've got a special veterans update. You know, last week I did an update on something we got from Task Force Omega, John Pagel, who is the chairman of Task Force Omega, which is a POW MIA activist group, concerning some alleged live sightings of very recently of POWs in Vietnam. We've got John on, let's see, he's on line three? Okay. And let's get an update. John, good evening, and welcome back to UFOs Tonight.
Well, good evening to you, Don, and Dwight,
good
and
evening.
Vicky, and Jeff, and the rest of the gang.
What's the update on this thing? We got the facts that Jeff had brought into us last week about a fellow by the name of Billy Hendon who was over in Bangkok, who evidently stumbled across some information, John, concerning some live POW MIA sightings.
Well, former Congressman Hendon has been involved in this issue for many years. He's been over in Southeast Asia many, many, many times. This recent trip, he's been over there since right after the first of the year, and he came across information as to live POWs in prison camps. He's requested visas from the Vietnamese government to go to these sites. The Vietnamese have refused to issue him and a POW daughter visas to enter the country. The U.S. ambassador in Bangkok refuses to intercede on his behalf. CNN overseas did an interview with former Congressman Hendon.
Right.
And that has not been shown here in the United States.
Well, we put out an appeal last week to everybody listening if they would please, please get in touch with CNN or contact you at Task Force Omega.
Well, unfortunately, you know, the government does control the media. So, the big thing is for the people to contact their congressmen and senators and ask why the U.S. government will not intercede on behalf of a former government official actively seeking resolution of this issue with current information, you know, and why is the government refusing to do anything to help, you know.
Well, if there still are some live POWs, John, do you have any fears that if the Vietnamese are in fact holding them, that they may harm them in any way?
Well, if anything is going to happen with this publicity of former Congressman Hendon is that the Vietnamese are going to move all the POWs from wherever they're holding them right now. And as you and any other veteran that served over there knows, you could move these people 100 feet from a prison and they wouldn't be seen.
Right.
And we're in a real caught between a real rock and a hard place over there anyway, because the American teams over there investigating have to rely on Vietnamese transportation, either on the ground or in the air. So if you're in a Vietnamese-supplied helicopter, you've got a Vietnamese pilot. So you take off and you say, okay, I want to go to these coordinates. The pilot gets the bird in the air. He just makes air-to-ground communication, says, okay, we're going to this location. So they've got lead time on moving people around.
So what can we do at this point?
Well, you know, it's back to the old Energizer Bunny. We just got to keep going and going and going, you know, and not let the government step on our neck and hold us down.
Have you gotten any official explanation from CNN as to why they did not run that stateside?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay, well, you know, tonight's guest, John, as a matter of fact, and I'm going to put you on hold. Can you get the program of where you're at?
No, I can't.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold because tonight's guest, which we're going to be bringing on here, I'm going to introduce right now, is a former special assignment correspondent with CNN. He is presently the president of Aero Bureau Corporation back in the great state of Virginia. He has built and is flying the first flying newsroom, which is a Lockheed L-188 Charlie Electra aircraft. My guest has been a technical advisor on sightings, encounters, most recently hard copy in a new television program that's going to be coming out called JAG. During his varied career, he has covered the war in Nicaragua, in Grenada, in Suriname. He is an accomplished pilot that's flown everything from C-5 transport, the big transport aircraft, to B-52s. He has lectured at the National Defense University, at the Army War College, and has been a pretty much an all-around good guy, and back in 1985 did the special four-part, which was a week-long series on the amazing Bentwaters Air Force case, which took place in the United Kingdom in 1980. My guest is Mr. Chuck DeCaro, and Chuck, it is a pleasure having you on the program. Welcome to UFOs Tonight. And how are things back on the East Coast?
Oh, just fine. Just wonderful, bright, starry night here in Virginia.
Well, we're still hoping for the rain clouds to blow away. Did you hear John Pagel there, Chuck?
I heard a little bit on some live sightings of American POWs. I got one for John. John, if you can hear me, did you ever think that they might be in friendly?
Are you there?
Yes, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, he can talk to you now, Chuck. You were saying?
Yeah, they might be in friendly hands in the sense that Special Forces did E&E nets throughout Southeast Asia during the war, and some of those nets may have crossed with stay-behind operations.
Well,
there might be some
the numbers,
folks in
the numbers were
friendly
talking
hands. If you recall, about a year and a half ago, some Hmong had come out of the jungle, and they were pretty well intact. Might be a possibility that they had snatched up some boys as part of an E&E net and could never get them out. What do you think of that, John?
Well, that doesn't explain the authenticator codes fired by satellite in 1992 outside the prison outside Haiphong.
No, I'm not saying either or. Maybe it's and.
It's anything is possible. But, you know, here we've got intelligence about 572 men being held in northern Laos by three Vietnamese divisions. And those those are not Hmongs, and they're not stay behind.
That's true, but I'm also pointing out there may be a possibility that, some fragment of an E&E net has managed to hold those people together. But
well,
I wanted to get your
your take on the CNN interview that was conducted with former Congressman Hendon, and it has not aired in this country, but it has aired in Europe. Is that correct, John?
Well, it's aired in Asia, in that area, but I don't even know if it's aired in Europe.
Do you have any idea, Chuck, why they might not air something like that in the States?
Well, there are a couple of CNNs. There's CNN that we see, and then CNI that everybody else sees, which is Cable News International, and that's a mix that's different from what we see here locally or domestically.
Well, we can get that here domestically now.
Yeah, you can, but it's not on all cable circuits or...
If you have a satellite dish, you can get it.
Yeah, if you've got a satellite dish, you may be able to pick it up. I think the reason why they're putting out CNI is to compete with the BBC World Service, which I think is currently giving Ted a heart attack because Ree Schoenfeld has come out of retirement to put it together.
But it's very interesting to me that they would run it at all internationally and not run a story like that, which has great significance in the States. I mean, that's the problem. It's very similar to the recent escape of the South Korean prisoner, in which it was one day that was covered. That fellow who had been put, they thought he was going to die, and he escaped, and he had been in prison for 30-odd years.
Uh-huh.
And it piqued my interest. I wanted to hear him ask questions. I wanted to know what was going on there in North Korea.
Since the
war.
Yeah.
But we've heard nothing. There was nothing in the newspapers, nothing on television, no follow-up whatsoever. And I thought that was quite an extraordinary escape.
Yeah, but you remember there's another thing here, too, is that CNI is punching out a lot of news. And CNN is doing OJ. Exactly.
Well, you're right. You're right.
You know, OJ is...
The New York Times isn't doing O.J.
Huh?
The New York Times isn't doing O.J.
Well, that's true, but I think we're discussing CNN.
Well, yeah,
operates.
But it's
CNI is optimized towards the international market, and hence, you know, any stories coming in a circuit, if they get bounced out because there's no room because they're doing the O.J. trial, then likely to go over to CNI where the O.J. appeal isn't as great.
Okay, well, unfortunately, as much as it would be great to talk about this subject for the next 2 hours, the show is about unidentified flying objects, so we better get... I know there are a lot of people out there listening right now that are saying, where in the hell are the UFOs? So we're going to get to that right now. John, I want to thank you for your call and your update, and as everybody knows, we do periodic veteran... issued updates, this in particular. And before we move along, you had called me up, Dwight, this week to tell me about this news story that you had heard in reference to the VJ Day celebration that everybody may find interesting before we move along.
Yes, it seems that the Clinton administration no longer will celebrate VJ Day. It's now End of War Day. It's caused a big stink with the Brits, but they have decided that it was not a victory, but an event, and that there should be no connotations that we are celebrating victory over Japanese any longer. I thought the State Department's explanation was pretty weak. So I don't know. I'm waiting for veterans groups. I've heard this. There have been already editorials on the radio, but I haven't seen anything in the newspapers about this, and I'm wondering when veterans groups are going to comment on our new revision of history.
All right. Well, we're going to move along now, and ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we're going to do the UFO thing. John, thank you for the update. We'll be in touch, and how's that computer going?
Well, little by little, getting used to it.
Okay.
Good luck, John.
Keep in touch, John.
Sure will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Chuck, let's get back to UFOs. Before we get into the Bentwaters thing or anything else, most recently you were on television a number of weeks ago, I guess it's been about 3 or 4 weeks ago, commenting on a rather amazing piece of footage that Hard Copy had aired, which evidently was shot with military and or government cameras right above Area 51. They had you on there commenting on this. From what I understand, it was shot with infrared as well as picked up on radar.
Yeah. The setup.
What can you tell us?
The setup of this is that the Air Force maintains a number of threat radars or threat simulator radars in various ranges in and around Nellis Air Force Base. The idea is that a given unit can practice against a given threat. If, for instance, you know that defending Iraq, you have a low blow or fire can or Bansong or other types of radars, you can practice against those radars with chaff and flares and tactics and active electronic countermeasures, and you can score how well you did by watching through a boresighted television or infrared camera to show if you did the right things at the right time while the simulated enemy is locking you up with a fire control radar and trying to fire a simulated SAM into your lips. What occurred apparently, and this is the data is kind of sketchy, is that about 2 or 3 years ago, at least two different objects kind of fell into the system that no one can quite explain. The first one was a dot on the horizon moving very slowly with a very solid radar return. This is the first time that I've ever seen video of either optical or infrared that not only had the range but the azimuth and a definite radar return.
Was there anything to make you think that this may have been some type of drone or some type of practice mission where
as long as we're going to be politically correct now, we're not going to say VJ Day or end of war day. The correct word is no longer drone. It's UAV. It's unmanned aerial vehicle. Let's get into the 1990s
UAV.
Now.
Yeah, but I still
get
talk about
flight.
I still talk about T-10s and T-12s and paracommanders. I mean, come on now.
But basically, yeah, you bet it could be a UAV. My thought on these things were, one, if it's a hoax. If it's a hoax, somebody's spending a lot of money on it.
Why? Yeah. What makes you say that?
Well, it's just hard to do. I mean, even with computer-generated animation, it's really hard to get all the voices in sync, saying the right things with the right call signs, all in sync with the video.
With the right display.
Say?
With the right display.
Yeah, with the right display that's moving, I mean, it can be done, and Dwight, who's in the movie industry, knows they can be done, but, for a horrendous amount of money. And I just, why would you want to do that? The second thing is that what you glommed onto was some type of weapons test. Now, that could be things like laser holograms, which, will give you a three-dimensional object, but it wouldn't explain why you're getting a radar return.
Yeah, you wouldn't get a return.
Or you could use laser interferometry or some laser type of weapon that would generate a spot in space that would cause an ionization
to form, which in fact would give off a radar return.
Well, it wouldn't give it off. It would bounce one. It would bounce radar energy. And or it could be a UAV. Now, when I gave a lecture at the SPY conference, Society of Photo-Optical Instrumentation Engineers, 2 years ago, I was asked by a company that produces UAVs to look into the future and see what one of these things might look like. And oddly enough, it was the one I came up with was kind of pancake-shaped and had the utilization of, among other things called MEMS, microelectromechanical systems, and sort of an advanced liquid crystal display that could make the vehicle change colors. If you can make it change colors, you could make it apparently change shape. Mm-hmm. Now, in Aviation Week, 2 years later, which about 3 weeks ago, I had a cover drawing of a stealth helicopter. And one of the lines deep in the text stated that, there was, in fact, a word of a UAV that could change color by some electro-optical means. So, that, to me, that sort of fits into what the hard copy video showed.
Well, when you and I spoke earlier, and you had indicated that this particular segment of material originally came from a military person.
Right.
Did you not? So if in fact this individual was being completely upfront, which would seem to indicate that they had no idea of what this thing was, that would either suggest that if there is a prosaic explanation, then it comes from a group that is very tightly controlled with strictly need to know, or it's something that's not prosaic.
Or now let me ask you this, Chuck. Would the military not test their own technicians sitting there? I mean,
Don't tell them.
Put the UAV out there and see how they wake up.
Well, that's absolutely correct. If you read the late Ben Rich's book, Skunkworks. He mentions in there an early test of HAV Blue. HAV Blue is a subscale prototype for the F-117 stealth fighter. They ran a HAV Blue above a Marine Hawk battalion, which had all its radars on, you know, the acquisition and early warning acquisition and fire control radars, and it just flew right over them. And the Marines were saying, "Nah, there's nothing out there. Absolutely, we're tip top." And the HAV Blue flew right over top of them. So, yeah.
And could have dropped a bomb right down there, too, couldn't it?
Sure. Well, actually, the stealth fighter, like the Romulan cloaking device of Star Trek, does have an Achilles heel. And that is, when you open the bomb bay doors, okay, the bombs come out on trapeze, like a long strut. And in that instant, it'll come up, okay, because the fins on the bombs, they're stock Mark 82s or Mark 83s or Mark 84s with laser heads, you know, they'll reflect radar. But, you know, we're talking bomb bay door, open sequence, trapeze down, bomb release, you know, a few seconds. But, yeah, you could see them in for that little tiny part of time if you happen to be looking in the direction of approach.
But now, did not hard copy also have some photographic experts take a look at this footage and come up with the idea that that it was something that was demonstrating high strangeness?
Yeah, high strangeness, but, you know, if you had seen a stealth fighter in 1978 or 1979, you would have thought it was pretty strange, too.
Right.
So
you're saying that the hard copy was running this thing as a UFO, and you think it's not a UFO, but that it is possibly identifiable?
Well,
is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is, and what I had recommended a hard copy was, you know, you really ought to run this thing down big time because, you know, once you eliminate the idea of a hoax, then you've got a big story involving an unknown weapon system in the post-Cold War that obviously costs a lot of money and taxpayers don't know about. That's a big story. And if you can eliminate that possibility, then you've got real high strangeness.
Okay.
What is this thing?
Okay, Chuck, we are at the bottom of the hour here. We're going to have to take a quick break, tell everybody who we are. We'll be back in just a minute. Stand by, please. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network. Tonight, my special guest, Mr. Chuck DeCaro, who is a former CNN Special Assignment Correspondent, now is the president of his own corporation called Aero Bureau Corporation, who has built and is flying the world's first flying newsroom. We'll be back after these words. With my guest, Mr. Chuck DeCaro. Chuck, let's talk about Bentwaters
okay.
for a few minutes. You were a correspondent, a special correspondent for CNN. Back in 1985, it was not usual to see any type of program where the acronym UFO was used. There was a great dry spell, if you will, from about 1974-75 in the public media until your four-part special report aired, where it was almost impossible to find any mention of this subject. But then, Bentwaters happened in 1980 around Christmas. 5 years later, you ran this this special four-part report. Give me the chronology about that, and what made you, I guess you could say, even risk your status as a serious journalist by dealing with a subject that so many people snicker at?
Well, you got to understand, what I did wasn't a UFO report. It was a calling to the task of the United States Air Force. What had happened is Larry Fawcett, who wrote a book called Clear Intent, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Larry was on the program a few weeks ago. I've known him for years.
Okay. Larry had come up with a document that, you know, I looked through his book, but the one document that that kind of set me aside was the document by Colonel Chuck Halt that basically in one page stated that this luminous thing flew over his base and landed near the perimeter fence, and then some security police patrolmen went out and looked at it, and then they went back the next morning and found pad prints and radioactivity, and then the next night it happened again, and there were 30 of them out there. And I said, you know, this is kind of unusual. And I said, the first thing I need to do is to establish the veracity of this report. And once that happens, then it becomes a Freedom of Information Act and basically a game of 20 questions officially with the United States Air Force. And so it was never really a UFO story. It was a paper chase about the actions of the United States Air Force. So it took me 6 months and probably 100,000 of Ted's dollars to go out and do that thing.
Well, Ted Turner is rumored to have a special fascination for UFOs. Is that
married
true?
Married to Jane.
Well, that's true. But we're not going to talk about that.
Because anybody else that's 56 years old looks like that?
I could get into trouble with the FCC if I started talking about Jane Fonda. But we're talking about Ted Turner.
Hanoi Jane.
Yes.
Forgot the first name.
Well, and wait, she's also been enhanced.
She's been enhanced?
Yes, she's been enhanced.
You think so much she reflects radar?
It's very possible.
Ah.
Maybe Roger. Two returns.
Undoubtedly.
No, I definitely will get in trouble with the FCC if we continue with this line.
Okay.
But I hear that Ted Turner does have a fascination with this subject.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
I
true?
Don't know. Ted has fascinations for lots of things, ranging from, you know, America's Cup to Fidel Castro. I haven't heard the thing about UFOs.
Well, I had. I just wondered if you could verify that. Evidently not.
No.
Well, at any rate, okay. So this story took about $100,000. Now, you went into this story. Did you have any preconceived notions? Were you completely open-minded? Did you think somebody was full of smoke and hot air, or what?
Oh no. I the only preconceived notion I had was, you know, there's more to it than this because I know the Air Force. And, you know, this document was from the deputy base commander, okay, so a field grade officer, lieutenant colonel, to his British counterpart. This is serious stuff. You know, I mean, this isn't lighthearted. It wasn't a hoax. So knowing that, when these things kind of happen, and you only get a one-page report, there had to be lots more things that had to be checked out, and hence more paperwork, to get this one-page report as an official version of the United States Air Force, who is a tenant unit on a British base. Okay? So the only preconceived notion I had was, you know, there was more to it than a simple, you know, four or five paragraph letter. So I went at it with the idea of, let me find out some of the witnesses. And we started out with talked to Larry Fawcett, who introduced me to Larry Warren, who had a list of other people whom he couldn't find, and then I just started tracking them down because I've been a defense reporter for many years and knew how to find folks. And then, you know, some strange things occurred. You know, the people we were talking to were Air Force security police patrolmen who are very macho, very introverted, very dedicated, and the last thing they'll ever do is talk to the press. But when I talked to one senior master sergeant who was still on active duty, and, you know, I did the military handshake and that sort of thing, and they realized that I might be able to help them, as I come to find out, then other senior NCOs and officers started calling me, which was very unusual.
And, yeah, considering that Bentwaters was a nuclear weapons storage facility, wasn't it?
Yeah. There are nuclear weapons bunkers there.
Right.
Which
made it even more sensitive.
So my first questions to them were...
And these security cops, incidentally, were not your run-of-the-mill rent-a-cop. I mean, these were the guys that would have been tasked with stopping a Soviet Special Forces assault in the event of war.
Exactly right. They weren't just the traffic cops. These were the boys armed with M203s and other goodies.
Because 1980, we still had the evil empire.
Well, not only had the evil empire, but you had the Red Brigades, you had various factions of Baader-Meinhof, that sort of thing, genuine homegrown European terrorists. And yeah, you bet, that's what their job was. And that's another question I asked.
So these guys were some pretty sharp characters.
They were sharp characters who don't usually get skittish about lights in the woods.
So what did you find out, Chuck?
Well, whatever it was real, at least to them. And that the facts in the report were verified by, you know, at least a dozen people that I got on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were affected.
Okay, let's stop right there now. You're a hard-bitten journalist. You've been around the block. Mm-hmm. You've flown aircraft all over the world. You're no young kid. You had to go into this story, number one, with some type of your own personal idea on what UFOs may or may not be. Have you considered, before we go any further, have you ever considered that, in fact, they could conceivably be an extraterrestrial craft or something from somewhere else, if you will?
Well, that's not the way I was pursuing the report.
Well, no. I'm just talking about your own personal view on the subject. If somebody said UFOs,
well, I always carry a video camera with me everywhere, and if, you know, one of these boys just happened to land in front of me, I go knocking on their door and say, "Can we do an interview here real quick?" You know,
can we just get the official explanation? And was a lighthouse, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that's what it has come down to from on high.
Well,
today.
But the point is that when I went over and asked all these folks, "Do you think it was a lighthouse?" is that yeah, we chased it on two different nights through the woods for 3 hours at a time. There were 30 of us, and we all couldn't figure out it was a lighthouse. You know, again, you're talking to senior military NCOs who've been there, done that.
Right.
So Phil Klass at the time was said, well, you know, they were embarrassed, and so rather than be embarrassed that they were fooled by a lighthouse, they continued the fiction. I don't think so. Mm. Phil also said at the time, well, if you notice that they see the light every 5 seconds or so, which is in line with the rotation rate of the lighthouse. Well, yeah, initially that was correct, but then they continued this for several hours.
Well, you should have heard what Phil Klass said on this very radio program about 5 or 6 weeks ago.
If you're listening, Phil, hi, how are you?
He would. I doubt that he's listening. He was screaming profanities on the air here.
Phil, listen.
Does he listen?
Yeah.
Well, he was screaming profanities. So, Phil, if you are listening, I'm still waiting for my letter of apology, you putz. Thank you. Okay. We've got about 1 minute before we've got to take another quick break. Chuck, let me ask you this. Did you consider that UFOs might be real prior to this story, and did you think that there might be something other than a prosaic explanation?
Well, I mean, we all thought about, you know, the possibility of extraterrestrial craft. The problem is, you know, I'm, as you said, a hard-bitten reporter. And the way I play the game is I don't, you know, go in with a preconceived notion.
No, I'm not.
You know, either they don't exist or they do exist.
I'm not asking you that. What I'm simply asking is, do you think that there might be something there worth the investigation, something that we cannot readily explain? Do you conceive that it's possible?
Yeah, I conceive this, that too many people who are reputable people, who are credible people, have seen too many things that are inexplicable not to believe that there's some phenomena, whether natural or otherwise, there, and therefore it deserves a good deal of study.
Okay, that's basically what I was looking for.
Okay,
we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with my very special guest, Mr. Chuck DeCarlo. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. Joining me in studio, Dwight Schultz, and you are listening to the Cable Radio Network. Hey, we are now back. Dwight, you had something you looked like you wanted to say before.
So the last time when I met Chuck with you at the UFO conference out there at LAX.
Yep.
Since that time, there have been a number of specials on UFOlogy on the primetime networks. Sam Donaldson in Primetime did a series, a special on Soviet KGB files opened up. I don't know whether you saw that.
I didn't see it.
And the thing that interests me, and
I find it ironic that it's Sam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't actually do the
and he didn't even snicker, did he?
No, he didn't snicker. They did it very straight. It was quite extraordinary because the thing that was interesting was that what the Soviets said had happened to them and that they were admitting are precisely the kinds of events like Bent Waters and many of the other events that are in Mr. Fawcett's book, Clear Intent, that the government says didn't happen. Our government says it didn't happen. The Soviets are now saying, yeah, it did happen. UFOs did appear over our nuclear installations, and in one case, the missile was armed, and they were in a panic. And they had officers testifying to it, they had regular personnel there testifying to it, and they had our Soviet colonel testifying to it that this was a fact. Now, we have reciprocal incidents here in this country, but of course our government is now still maintaining its secrecy. Now, this is now, we're seeing more and more of this on national television with straight faces and not with not with a lot of jokes and snickers. So my question to you, since, well, you didn't see it, but have you noticed, as I have in the last 9 months, a shift towards maybe not the ridicule that this subject has entailed?
Is that for me or for Dwight?
That's for you.
Oh. yeah. But I remember the report that Connie and Connie Chung did a while back with Dan Rather. And
48 hours?
Excuse me?
Well, 48 hours, the Roswell?
I guess it was 48 hours on UFOs. But it was so broad that, you know, you really, yes, they're doing it on prime time, but not with any depth. You know, they covered it broadly and didn't do any, in my opinion, any primary research.
Mm-hmm.
What's needed is, as we were able to do at CNN 10 years ago, was to take a whole bunch of money and a lot of time, a lot of effort from a lot of people, and focus on one incident.
Yeah.
Just one, and get down as deep as you possibly could and try to figure out what was going on. Our conclusion, by the way, was we couldn't go any further because the Air Force was being rather obstreperous, but whatever the event was, it was certainly real to the people who experienced it.
Well, doesn't that tell you something by the very nature that for years and years and years, at least since 1969, that the United States Air Force said that this subject had no substance? Now, my question is a simple one. You being in the media and knowing a lot of journalists, a lot of correspondents, a lot of people that have covered everything from robberies, rapes, and murders to full-blown wars, something this high profile when this thing does hit the airwaves, and the way that the government has traditionally, government meaning all facets, not just the military, but also the intelligence people, the way that they have always handled this, shouldn't this raise some flags on journalists' ears if they have any gray matter between their ears, that there's got to be a reason why Uncle Sam gets so hanky when the subject is mentioned?
Sure. The problem is that, especially with television, you got to understand about television. Television is a medium that transfers information by interpretation of imagery and sound. If you don't have any imagery, you don't have very good television, and people don't watch. Think about it. If you ever watch cable and you get into cable access and there's some school board meeting, you know, with people just droning along, it's terrible, terrible video. If it's a slideshow, it's terrible video. So if you want to do a television story, you've got to have some really good video. Now, that hard copy story exploited the video but didn't exploit the story. And it got lost, sandwiched between O.J. and Michael Jackson. Literally, a really good story. Only the other, I thought that the video from Site S30 was hot stuff.
I did too.
Either as a weapon system of some sort or as a genuine unknown.
Well, I should tell you, Chuck, that hard copy has absolutely no interest in doing hard journalism.
Yeah, but they got hard money. And
but they like the flash, like you said, the O.J. Simpson, the Michael Jackson thing, and wow, a real piece of weird UFO footage.
Yeah, well, I think that they may possibly get some leads from people who saw it, which might be a way to pursue the story, but they're not going after it with any great vigor, at least to the best of my knowledge. And I think they've got possession of that video for some months. So at least they've got it in their hot little hands, and they may do something else with it, and I wish they would.
Well, you were just recently in Europe, and
What's so funny about that? I'm sitting here not knowing why everybody's laughing.
We didn't let you in on a story, Dwight.
You're not
cleared for this stuff.
He has no need to know. Tell him.
Yeah, you have no need to know, Dwight.
Well, my breasts aren't picking up. What are you talking about?
Be nice. I'll tell Kelsey if you're not nice.
you've been bumming all around the world. Now this subject is encountered everywhere. What has been your experience with other journalists from other countries as far as this is concerned? Have they treated it in a more journalistic investigative manner?
Yeah, but they didn't have the investigative tools to do anything. I mean, I can remember back as far back as 1964 when I was visiting Italy. As a kid, there was a big story about dischi or disco volante, flying discs, in the Corriere del Sera, and I thought having a major newspaper lay down a UFO story on the front page is pretty cool. The problem was that, you know, they ran into their own government's bureaucracy, or more like shoulder shrugging. We don't know what it was. It doesn't seem to be harmful, so catch you next week. I understand the Belgians are are interested in the subject, as are the French, and they are more open, but you know, I haven't heard anything from the Belgians or the French in terms of real hard evidence.
Well, we had a former citizen, a native-born citizen of the former Soviet Union, in studio, a good personal friend of mine, Paul Stonehill, who's been chasing this enigma for many years. He's very well known for his investigations and writing back in Russia Today. But what has come out of the former Soviet Union in the last several years has been nothing short of absolutely almost heart-stopping dramatic. How do you explain that? I mean, for years, the Russians would toss somebody into a mental health facility if they even admitted seeing a UFO. And suddenly they were opening up their military and intelligence files, letting this stuff out by the ton.
Well, I haven't seen it, so I can't comment on it.
Well, you know George Knapp.
Yeah, I know George.
You've talked to George, I'm sure.
He's come back. I haven't seen his lectures, the following. I haven't seen the hard stuff. I understand the weight of what they're saying, But again, they don't have any hard stuff. What I would be interested in seeing, though, is their intelligence about our intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
No, no, seriously.
No, no, that's exactly what we were talking about.
In Larry Fawcett's book, I distinctly remember a memo that he had FOIA'd out of the FBI, dated about, I don't know, August or so, of or September of 1947, saying that the Army intelligence had captured a couple of flying discs at Roswell, and including some bodies of flyers dressed in silver speed suits, I think was the quote. And it was top secret, went to Jake Hoover. Well, that may have recoiled you on the idea of UFOs and stuff, but what got me is that the Army was being spied upon by the FBI, which I think was an even bigger story. So, you know, and I would like to have followed it, but again, the Army just shut down and didn't tell the FBI anything. Now there's, you know, we now know about some of the balloon projects that were going on at Roswell that they may have been trying to cover up.
No, that makes no sense.
No, the Project Mogul thing that you're talking about, it has been examined from so many different angles. That holds no more water than the fact that it might have been an A-9 variant of a V-2 rocket. That just doesn't hold up.
Not only that, the report, I mean, the extraordinary thing, if it had been a real report, you could accept it. But the report said, well, we can't prove it was a... I mean, I found that...
report are we talking about?
The U.S. Air Force final report on the Roswell incident said, we can't prove it was a Project Mogul balloon. But... that's what it was. I mean, that's sort of like a ufologist saying, I can't prove it was a UFO, but I know it's an intelligent being up there. I mean, you know.
I'll give you an interesting take. I had some people ask me about Mogul, and you know that I'm basically in the reconnaissance business, and and I've studied reconnaissance at some length, but one of the interesting things I noticed from that is that the Mogul balloons were, you know, 600-700 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
Did you understand that they were that big?
Sure, they would go up many tens of thousands of feet.
Right. Well, the length of the thing.
Oh yeah, so they could expand up at those high altitudes.
Well, you might think about this for a second. What happens in New Mexico in the summertime?
A lot of thermals.
There you go. And what happens when you have thermals?
Well, heat rises.
And then you get cumulus, and then it goes into cumulonimbus. Thunderstorms. You get cells, isolated, fast-moving cells mm-hmm. of thunderstorms. And you remember the Roswell incident talked about thunderstorms that day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the Navy was experimenting with very low-frequency antennas, trail from the airplanes, these are several miles long, and usually with a big weight at the end to try to get some vertical polarization. The first time they went out and tried this many years ago, they flew between two clouds. And what happened was the antenna formed a preferential pathway. So essentially what they did was discharge a lightning bolt. And, of course, they fried the airplane. They managed to get home in one piece. Now, I thought about this with the Mogul. Now, let's assume that the theories about UFOs being magnetically powered or electromagnetically powered or electrogravitationally powered are correct. And the Mogul balloon has been launched. And it's flying along and it's near a cell. And this vehicle goes over to investigate this very unusual thing. And it gets there just as the Mogul balloon forms a preferential pathway for about 4 gigawatts of lightning bolt. Boom. Now, that would explain Mogul, the thunderstorm, and the amount of mass that intelligence folks stumbled upon thereafter.
But let's not forget Jesse Marcel's description of this material, Chuck. Mm-hmm. He couldn't bend it, he couldn't he couldn't burn it, and this stuff was hundreds of yards wide and 3/4 of a mile long.
No, I concur, and I'm just giving you an explanation of how Mogul, the UFO, Jesse Marcel, and the native weather could all have fit into once, giving you and a one-of-a-kind catastrophic event for the vehicle.
Boy, that'd make a heck of a movie. Chuck, we are at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Let me put you on hold here. We will be back with my special guest, Mr. Chuck DeCaro, in just a moment. First, we have the UFO media update and landing pad coming up with Vicki Cooper. And we're going to be taking your calls when we come back. So here's Renee to give you the number.